They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Hidley hodley there, neighborinos. I've been watching a lot of The Simpsons lately. Nice. Welcome back to Magellan's at the Movies, a movie reviewing podcast hosted by Nathan and Elliot Mogulyines. And that's pretty much our hook, is that we are Nathan and Elliot Mogulyines and we review movies. I'm Elliot. Joining me is Nathan. Say hello, Nathan.
Yep. Hey.
Great stuff. Nathan, we are on the very threshold of what was once one of the biggest nights in movies and is now just kind of another day. Pretty much just YouTube reaction fodder. But the Oscars is coming. No one can stop it. Nathan, we're not doing an Oscars episode this time because neither of us have seen all of the movies. And our motivation to do so is limited to non-existent. But Nathan, what do you think about the nominees that you have seen? Do you have any like strong picks out of what you've got? And of course, are you excited for the new host, Conan?
I am excited for the new host. I have very high hopes for Conan. I think he's an incredibly funny individual. So I am very excited to watch what he does. As for the nominees, yeah, we're not doing an Oscars episode, and I just really don't feel particularly strongly about most of the nominees. I think a lot of the biggest stories from this Oscar season have been movies that I didn't really care for or didn't really have a ton to say. Demi Moore and The Substance is a perfect example. I know a lot of people who were thrown in a tizzy about how good it was and stuff, and I did not feel the same as them. I thought it was a fairly middle of the road body horror sort of story that kind of runs out of steam for me near the end of the film. And then a lot of the other things, Wicked, I don't care for Wicked. Emilia Perez, we've kind of addressed already. It's looking like the Best Picture race is going to come down to Anora versus Conclave. I have seen both of these movies. Personally, I think Anora is maybe the one I would be rooting for a little more. I think it's a reasonably fun...
Lord.
What? You don't agree?
Oh, I don't agree.
Of course you don't. Of course you don't. Well, I just think... I feel very similarly about both of the movies in terms of I think they're solid films, but they have reasonably significant issues that hold it back from being something that I really adore. So I'm going to give the tiebreaker to Sean Baker, who I think has been making really solid indie films for the last couple of years and kind of deserves his flowers in some sense. I also, well, yeah. See, this is why we're not doing an episode, because I don't feel strongly about any of the movies except like Dune Part 2 and Nickel Boys are the only two that I would be like really strongly ready to go to bat for. Everything else I'm like, yeah, I guess if it has to win, it can win.
Well, giving someone an Oscar just because, shrug, I guess it's his time or something, lol, that doesn't make sense to me. But yeah, I'm of a largely similar mind. I'm just looking through these of the ones that I've seen. I really like Conclave. Of this list of the ones that I've seen, I would say that Dune Part 2 is probably my favorite.
But
yeah, I do really enjoy Conclave. The Brutalist, there's a review up on it for the blog on the blog. You can check that out if you want. Anora, I like Anora well enough. I do think it has some issues. Wow, I haven't seen very many of these. Yeah, Emilia Perez, that movie is just hell on earth.
Jeez.
So, I'm sorry, but that movie is truly abysmal.
Oh, that's funny.
And yeah, I can't really say that I'm just riding Dune Part 2 all the way in all of its categories. In terms of the other categories, like, I think there's lots of admirable performances out there. I like Ralph Fiennes in Conclave. I also thought that Adrian Brody was great in The Brutalist. Have I even seen any of the Best Actress nominations?
It's Wicked, Emilia Perez. So you've seen Emilia Perez.
No.
Substance. You have it in front of you. Why are you making me remember things?
You did that on your own. I did not ask you for that.
Oh, okay.
Fernanda
Torres from I'm Still Here.
I am planning on seeing I'm Still Here this weekend.
Oh, good, good, good. Our homeland.
Yes, the Brazil. Fatherland.
Yes.
Brazil. Anyway, just give all of the costume and production design and stuff, give all that to Dune Part 2 and let God sort the rest out. That's my
opinion. I don't believe Dune Part 2 was nominated in costumes.
Oh, that's right. I was really offended about that.
Yeah, it actually missed a lot of technical categories. I will say, on the subject of the Oscars, I don't know if you've been seeing some of these things that have been coming out that anonymous Oscar voters have been sharing, like, their ballot and their thinking for some things. And it's gotten some headlines because some of their thinking is ridiculous and stupid. For instance, two people said that they didn't vote for Ralph Fiennes to win Best Actor because he already won, which he hasn't. And instead they voted for Adrian Brody, who has won. There was also more than a couple people saying that they didn't watch Dune Part 2 because they hated Dune Part 1, and so why would they watch another one? Way at the beginning, there was more than a few people who said that they weren't going. They had tried to watch The Brutalist and got 15 minutes in and quit. And so I don't want to sit here and, like, belittle the Oscars any more than we need to. I just want to point out to some people who seem to be under the misapprehension that the Oscars, the Academy voters, are people who love movies. The Academy voters are people who work in movies. And for some of them, that does mean they love movies. But if you're just like a lighting guy who got into the Academy because your buddy put you into the Academy, you don't care. Like, you don't care about it in the same way that some of these people who are on, I'll just say, some film spaces. I'm not active in any of these, but, you know, these people aren't on Twitter every day tweeting about movies because they love movies. They aren't on Letterboxd religiously watching and logging tons of movies. These are people who, like, their 9-to-5 is working in movies, and then they also get to watch movies and vote for the Oscar thing. So I think people should keep that in mind as they're evaluating some of these things. Like, obviously they feel differently than you if you love movies and they just, like, do this.
Okay, got that out of your system.
Well, I think people sometimes are kind of harsh on the Oscars, and it's like, yeah, if I was like a Grammy voter, my opinions would be kind of idiotic because I don't care about music.
All right, well, there you go. There's the last word on the Oscars controversy. Now that Nathan has said his piece, we can all be done with it.
The issue is sometimes I like,
oh my gosh,
sometimes I just like talking about things for the sake of, like, hey, let's share some opinions. And as soon as, Elliot, you don't care about the thing, you're just like, this is why this is a bad podcast, is because sometimes I share a thought and Elliot's just like, I don't care at all. I'm not responding to that. We're moving on.
Well, it's not that I don't care. It's just that a long time ago, I realized that the Oscars, the system is, let's say, imperfect. But Yeah, democracy doesn't work, guys. Plato knew it. We all know it.
Plato did know it.
And this is why. No, I it doesn't really matter to me. I mean, the Oscars, it's a neat little thing to do every year, but I mean, they don't get to decide. They don't, their word isn't final. If you loved Drive Away Dolls and that's your favorite movie of last year, then you don't need the Oscars to give you validation. You just need to watch more movies and develop a better palate.
So true. I will also say that this Oscar season has been a little frustrating. Nice try, Elliot. We can't move on without me getting the last word. I see that. This Oscar season has also been frustrating because a bunch of my favorite movies missed on everything. Just last week, a buddy of mine watched Juror Number 2 on my recommendation. And so I was talking about it, and I was just reminded again of, like, what an appalling snub Juror Number 2 not getting anything anywhere was. And that's maybe not the Academy's fault. Maybe we can blame David Zaslav. But I think that's what's more frustrating than anything else, that the movies I was most excited about didn't get anything.
Yeah, dude. People out here on that Kathleen Kennedy hate train. Let's get some disapproval for David Zaslav.
So true. At least Kennedy never, like... I mean, I guess she did cancel a lot of things, but she didn't throw away movies that were in the can.
That's true. Not a good look, Dave.
So true. All right. Anyway, Elliot, let's get to the movie we're actually talking about today.
Oh, that's right. We review movies. We don't just talk about them.
We don't just talk about, yeah. All right. Well, so say what movies we're doing today.
Well, we're only doing one movie today, Nathan, just like always. And that movie, that is the one movie, Mad Max Fury Road. This is a 2015 post-apocalyptic action movie directed by George Miller. Lots of acclaim for this movie. It didn't do very well at the box office, which I think is a crying shame. But
yeah, it did.
No, it didn't. What are you talking about?
I'm pretty sure it did really well.
Oh, we're gonna find out.
Let's get a quick fact check here. Oh well.
Although the film made a gross profit, The Hollywood Reporter calculated that the net loss incurred by the film was around $20 to $40 million.
Ooh, okay, all right. Well, it did okay, I guess.
Yeah. So, geez, Louise, Nathan, how about a little trust? Anyway, what was I even saying? Yeah. It. But regardless of money, doesn't matter. Everyone or most everyone who sees this movie really enjoys it. It got Oscars, it got noms, it got it's always on the best of lists. Excuse me. And today we're gonna talk about it. Nathan, why don't you run us through your history with the Mad Max franchise, and then talk to us about your experience with this movie. What do you think? What do you feel? What do you know? What do you believe?
All right, well, that got really existential there at the end, so I'm going to ignore those questions, just like I do in my real life. Just kidding.
Oh, so true.
I don't really have that much history with the Mad Max franchise. I watched this one and before I watched any of the others, and the only other one that I've seen from the rest of the franchise, well, I guess I've seen Furiosa. But the only other one that I've seen was I've seen the original Mad Max, which I don't really care for. And I think, anyway, we're not here to review that one. But I can't, I don't think I saw this movie in theaters, because I'd be kind of surprised if I saw a movie like this in 2015. I don't think I was locked in enough on the movie thing quite yet. I think it took two or three more years before I was watching stuff like this, very ardently, or going out of my way to watch stuff like this. So I had to have just watched this on DVD for some reason. I want to say I watched it not too long after it came out. I feel like that's true. But yeah, I've always really loved this movie. Like you said, Ellie, everyone who sees it really likes it because it's kind of one of those, you know what you're getting into. Like you see the cover, you see the first 10 minutes. If you enjoy the first 10 minutes, you're going to enjoy the rest of this movie. Probably your enjoyment is going to go up because, in my opinion, the movie just kind of goes to a higher octane level as it goes on. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I continue to really enjoy it. Every time I rewatch it, I enjoy it more. I did read, we're not here to be paid promoters, but I did read The Blood and Chrome, Sweat and Chrome, Blood and Chrome, something in Chrome, a book about the making of Mad Max Fury Road. So I'm going to have a couple of interesting questions for you, Elliot, during this episode, based on what I learned or what I gleaned from reading this book. But yeah, that's kind of my opening thoughts. Elliot, what about you? Do you feel similarly? Do you also love this movie?
Absolutely. I've seen this movie like 8 times, so it was unlikely that the 9th time I was going to be like, hey, wait a second, this movie's terrible. If memory serves, I think that we rented this movie from like a Redbox or something. Hmm. Watched it together at home. I have an early memory of watching this movie at home. And yeah, I've seen all of the Mad Max movies.
Wow.
I've seen Mad Max, the movie's terrible. I've seen Mad Max 2, the movie's all right. And I've seen Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, that movie's terrible. and I don't really love Furiosa. But in the middle of all of that, you have this shining diamond in the rough gem of a movie. I think this movie's fantastic. I'm excited to talk about it. I'm excited. Well, I guess I'm not excited. I'm interested in what these questions will be. I'm going to start us off on a very, like, base level of just talking about the cool factor. Because this movie is cool, man. Everything about it is cool. Like, the costumes, the cars, the very conceit of the movie, of just what is essentially one massive chase scene of insane practical cars, over-the-top characters, practical action. I mean, how cool can you get? It's just awesome. And the characters are so cool. I love Furiosa. I love Max. They're both great. I really like them as a team. I feel like this watch, I was the most appreciative of them as a unit. Like, their skills really complement each other very well. And I at the beginning, when they're fighting, I was just like, you guys are going to be such good friends. And yeah, Tom Hardy does a great job. Apparently he was a complete tool on set, which is unfortunate. But hey, he does a great job. He does so much better than Mel Gibson. I mean, come on. Mel Gibson, setting aside his personal views, he's just not that good of an actor. But Tom Hardy really sells the stoic, man of few words, man of action type thing. And Charlize Theron, she's a seasoned veteran of the action movie scene. So she does really well. I'm kind of like getting past my original concept. I just think this movie is so cool, man. And throughout the whole thing, I just watched it like this morning. Mm. And throughout the whole thing, especially the very last action sequence, throughout the whole thing, I just had a big smile on my face because it's just so darn cool. Oh, man. What do you think, Nathan?
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree here. The movie is incredibly cool, and you touched on a lot of the things that make the movie cool in... I'm going to reference this book a bunch because the making of this movie was genuinely a little nutty. So the cars, like you said, it's practical effects on almost everything, as much as possibly could be done in reality, was done in reality. So every single one of the cars that you see is a real physical car that a designer really built, and they spent a really long time. They basically had a warehouse down in Australia where every day these artists would go out to like a dump, like a trash heap, grab a bunch of random nonsense, come back, and glue it to cars. And so that's how you end up with these cars that just look insane, but insane in a way that's like really cool. They look, from my understanding, they were completely impractical to drive. I think that the semi-truck, the war rig, could only drive for something like 20 minutes before it ran out of gasoline. And it was like, it's a big thing with a big gas tank, but because it's so obscenely big and laden with so much ridiculous stuff on it, it was just a huge pain to try and film with it. But it pays off because the designs, because all of them were designed by someone with a real physical understanding of how things come together, they look very cool and very interesting. And I would again contrast this with, we mentioned in our review of Avatar that one of the issues we have with the Avatar world that keeps us from being very excited about that world is because it feels like a world that was designed by a VFX artist and not a biologist. It doesn't feel like it has any amount of reality or vermicillitude.
Verisimilitude.
I knew it. See, I paused even to let you correct me. Whereas the cars and the world in Mad Max are designed by people with a cohesive vision who also have an understanding of how these things really work. Again, this, you know, it does add some surrealism since, as I mentioned, none of these cars would function as they're depicted functioning, in the sense that none of them could drive for that long without breaking or needing to be refueled. But it does add a lot of reality because what you're seeing is a real physical item. And the action, too, is for the most part done physically. Those people on poles who were swaying back and forth, that's a real stunt. They really had people on those things flipping back and forth. And that's crazy. Like, that's incredibly unsafe, but it, you know, it pays off in the fact that it looks incredible.
Yeah, I think that you use the perfect word there in vision. This movie has just such a striking and complete vision. Like, it's definitely doing the lived-in universe thing, that there's lots of infrastructure, both physical and social, that we're kind of, that we're seeing in action, but clearly it has, like, very deep roots in this post-apocalyptic society. Like the War Boys, and Nux keeps on making references to like peculiar illnesses that the War Boys are vulnerable to. Everything is built around cars and guns. The three like main powers that we are introduced to is Gastown, the Bullet Farm, and Immortan Joe's The Citadel, which has all these cars. I mean, everyone has lots and lots of cars. Actually, I wonder what does Immortan Joe contribute to this economy? Just like War Boys, maybe?
He has like water.
Yes, that's a good point. Water. Yeah, it all feels very real. It definitely has that sense of verisimilitude, that this is a world that someone spent time thinking about and creating and making sure that not just the broad strokes of like the aesthetic are there, but the nitty-gritty of how do people talk, how do they act, how do these social structures impact them. And like I said many episodes ago, I love mechanics. And that's what that is. Mechanics. That's a joke.
Wow, good one.
Thanks. Yeah, just the thought that's gone into, okay, what does this look like? What would it look like in real life? Yeah, I'm just rambling now, but it looks great, and it just feels great to inhabit this world and to learn more about it. The world building is spaced out really well, not too much, not too little. I just really like learning about all that stuff and seeing stuff that I don't understand, like the weird guys who walk around on stilts. I'm like, wow, that's really cool. I wonder what their deal is. Even though probably nobody actually knows, and they were just included to look cool.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I liked what you said about it feels like we're dropped into the world, because I think in a very real sense, Max is dropped into a completely different story, right? Like, Max is a prototypical white hat, if you think of the Man with No Name as, right, a character who just kind of stumbles into another story and then provides some assistance with that person's story and then leaves, as he does at the end of the movie. Because Max gets kidnapped at the beginning, but then after he gets kidnapped, he's really just kind of along for the ride, and he's put into this story of Furiosa trying to escape with Immortan Joe's wives. So I think that's another thing that makes the movie really suck you in, is because Max is being sucked in a sense, that he's being pulled into a different story just like the audience is. This does lead me to my first question that I have for you, and maybe you've already answered it in some sense in talking about the mechanics and stuff, but as I'm reading the book and it talks about the lengths to which they went to help so many of the characters, even like the extras, have an understanding of stuff. They brought in, I'm not joking here, they brought in like an expert in cults who trained every extra who played a war boy in, like, all of them had to write like a binder for like what they care about most and what they love most about Immortan Joe. And they would have like meetings at the end of days of filming where they would like just get together and like yell about Immortan Joe together. And almost every person on the film had to do something similar to this. Every woman who was playing one of the wives had to do a whole backstory and a whole thing with themselves. I'm pretty sure Tom Hardy had to do something that he probably ignored because he was being a bit of a problem on set. But they just went into an insane amount of effort to put all of these things. And I guess my question was, and again, maybe you've already answered this, do you think all of that comes into screen? Like, do you really think War Boy number 3, knowing that his dad was like fun to play catch with, do you really think that impacts the movie or has a meaningful impact in your enjoyment of the film?
Well, I don't know. I think maybe, like, in the aggregate, it probably does. Like, if one or two war boys were slacking off, I wouldn't notice. But honestly, that's kind of hard to answer because I feel like in order to get a really good sense for the extent to which that level of effort impacted the final product, I would have to see the version of this movie where that was not present. I don't know if it helped them, like if it helped the war boys and the extras and everyone get into character. Then obviously, yeah, I think that it worked. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that it shines through?
I think some of it comes down to something that you've already said, right? That there's a very clear vision behind the film, and it's very clear that everything in the movie is there with a purpose. Even the still people, and even if that purpose is just like to look cool, I have no doubt that George Miller has an understanding of like the still people and why they're on stilts and how they fit into the general ecosystem of this world that he's created. So I think I'm always a little skeptical of people who are like, I had to keep a journal as the Joker for 2 months in order to portray the Joker. But at the same time, I think being incredibly committed to something and forcing everyone else who's involved in it to also be as committed as you are, I think that does come through in the final product. And like I said, the fact that they went through so much effort to make everything real, to make everything compelling, to make everything feel as possible as possible, I think it does have some effect, although I agree that it's difficult to gauge how much that matters, because presumably they went through a similar thing with Furiosa, and I just really don't care for that movie at all. So maybe you can put a lot of heart into something and it's still just bad because the structure of it doesn't fit the story you're trying to tell, or the structure of it is just not as interesting.
Well, I don't know. I think that this is a question we'll never have a definitive answer to. I think that, probably there is something of that, that Mad Max Fury Road is very simple in its basic plot.
Yeah.
And Furiosa is a lot more sprawling and a lot more intricate. And so there is a chance that you kind of lose some of that. Because one of the things that's key, I think, to this movie's success is just never-ending energy.
Yeah.
Even in those slower moments when we're learning more about the characters, we're just kind of hanging out, getting to know them, and they're getting to know each other, there's just, I don't know, maybe it's to do with the cinematography, the editing, something. It's just every frame of this movie is suffused with a dynamism, and maybe it's just because it does go back to that vision, that it's just fun to look at. This movie is just nice to watch because the Australian desert is very beautiful.
African desert. It's filmed in... Oh, shoot.
But
I read the whole stupid book.
You said they had a warehouse of cars in Australia. Did they make them in Australia and then ship them to Africa?
Yeah, they did most of the pre-production in Australia, because that's where all the original Mad Max movies were done.
Oh, well, I would have just started everything in Africa and saved myself the trouble. But anyway, the African desert is very beautiful. I mean, the Australian desert is as well, but anyway, all deserts are very nice. let me be politically correct. All right, all deserts are nice. Also, this is just apropos of nothing, but this movie has some of the most obvious day for night I've ever seen.
That's not true. No, it is true.
But yeah, the setting, okay, looks very beautiful,
yeah.
And the cars look awesome, and the characters just look interesting, like, because of their costumes, because of their makeup. It's just, on a visual level, the movie is never anything less than gripping to watch. I don't know what can I say, man. Just watch it. You'll understand. I think that if you haven't seen it, you'll probably know what I'm rambling on about by the first frame.
Yeah. I do think another thing that I think helps this energy that you're talking about, and I mentioned it in my original thoughts, that this movie has a really great sense of every new action sequence has something different and interesting about it that makes it more exciting than the one you just saw, or at least more interesting, right? That we start with fairly basic chase scene sort of things. And when I mean basic, I mean genuinely, like, they're in a desert. It's not a chase scene where they're, like, driving all over the place. They're driving in a straight line. They have to just catch them. And then they introduce, right, the giant sandstorm. But then when we go from there, right, we have the chase scene with motorcycles, which is much more interesting because they're kind of having to drive through a place that it's not so much a chase scene as they're just driving through the motorcycles causing issues. And then we have the sequence where they're trying to shoot the people in the fog. We have the sequence where we introduce, again, different types of enemies that we have, the pole cats or the pole, I can't remember what they call them, but the pole people, and then the final race to get back through them is, you know, all of these are different in different ways because they have different objectives, in both the protagonist and antagonist have different objectives, and they introduce different wrinkles in terms of what cars are involved, what things are being used, what like techniques are being utilized. And I just think it makes it so much more fun when it's not like here's guy punching guy number 10, or here's, you know, the same fight scene that you saw earlier. And for a movie that's comprised primarily of, you know, car combat and primarily of action sequences, it's really important to have that kind of variety. Otherwise, the movie would be much more boring, I think.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think that the movie is pretty video gamey in that regard.
Yeah.
That you've got levels introducing new enemy types. There's a boss fight against the bullet farm guy. And then a final boss in Immortan Joe and the People Eater. And I think that's probably why my favorite action scene is the last one, because it's the most, it's all of it together. Like there's so many components to it, and all the cars look great, and the music, holy cow, this movie has good music. I listen to it casually.
Yeah.
Way to go, Junkie XL, for a very strong soundtrack. But yeah, I do love the Polecats, or whatever they end up being called. And they're responsible for my favorite shot of the movie, where Max is on one of the pole things, and it like swings up just as a car is exploding, and so he kind of like glides across the screen while there's a car exploding in the background. It's great. And I think that it's used in like in a lot of the movie's promotional materials. Like, they knew we've got something here with this shot. I do want to now talk a little bit more in depth about the characters, because I think that it is another reason for this movie's success, is that these characters are simple, and the movie never tries to make them more than what they are. One of my pet peeves with simple movies is when they try to overcomplicate it by very much having a reach that exceeds their grasp when it comes to the complexity or the emotional impact of their characters. But crucially, it also doesn't undercut it. Like, it doesn't let the characters just be one-dimensional. Like, they are cool, but also Furiosa is very caring towards the wives. Max is sort of his, I wouldn't call it necessarily an arc, but his journey is one of growing acclimated to these people, forging some relationships, and a friendship with Furiosa. They're just friends in my mind. I want them to be friends because they work so well together. And yeah, Immortan Joe, like he's an example of a character that didn't need to be anything more than what he is. Like, he's Darth Immortan Joe is what he is. And huge props to the actor for his performance, as well as the sound design of his voice. His voice sounds really cool. He's a great antagonist, and so are the bullet farmer and the people eater. Mostly because they're basically like movie monsters. So they're intimidating and they're satisfying to see get their just desserts. So yeah, but do you have any special or strong, there you go, opinions on the characters?
Yeah, I have a strong affinity for the quality of them. I agree with everything you said. I think Furiosa is a really fantastic character, and I think Charlize Theron does an amazing job of, like you said, she's a very tough person. She's clearly gone through some stuff that we'll see what she goes through if you watch the prequel. But she's able to be, right, caring and affectionate towards the wives, trying to be understanding, right? She's firm when she needs to, when they're in a chase scene and she's having to tell them, like, hey, I need you to reload this gun and I don't have time for you guys, like, weeping and crying or whatever. We need to get this done. But then she's also very good about being kind to them. And yeah, Max is, he doesn't go on necessarily an arc, but I think it's a really great example of not rushing a character to the place that you want them to end up. Like you said, we know as soon as Furiosa and Max meet that they're going to team up, they're going to work together. But the movie doesn't cheapen that by making Max suddenly not care about escaping or making Furiosa suddenly not caring about getting to the green place. They both stay true to those things, and the movie naturally develops their relationship to the point that I think you could say that they're friends, or they're at least, you know, helping each other without being upset about it, or without being bitter towards each other about it. And I think that's really fantastic. Tom Hardy, he does a good job. He does a lot of grunting and pointing and stuff. But I think it's really, the characters are very well done. And even the wives, too, I think do a really good job of having a bit of, again, a mini character arc, in the sense that in the beginning of the movie, they're very skittish, they're very nervous. And then by the end of the film, they're all helping in different ways with the final push to get back to the Citadel. And yeah, it's just great. Nicholas Holt is also here doing a very good job as Nux, a war boy who, you know, his worldview is kind of falling apart over the course of the film. But yeah, I think all of the characters are really, really well done.
Yeah, dude, Nicholas Holt, he's got it where it counts. He's a great actor.
Gosh, so true.
I've never thought that he was anything less than brilliant. And
Brilliant, wow.
If you're looking for brilliance from Nicholas Holt, I think watch Juror Number 2. And then you can be sad about it not getting nominated for anything. I do have a few small minor issues. I'm not super into the romance between Nux and the red-haired wife, whose name I struggle to think of. It's not bad by any means. It's just it's just like barely there. So I'm sad when Nux dies. Spoiler, by the way. But not because I'm like, oh, they were so beautiful together. More just because I like Nux and he's funny, and Nicholas Holt is very good as him. I think that the first boss fight against the bullet farmer is probably the weakest action sequence of the bunch. Again, not bad by any means, but just compared to the other ones, this one is mainly just people taking cover from gunfire, and then the Max takes care of things off screen. Although Furiosa getting the shot off on the light is really cool. But yeah, that's, again, like, that's such minor. It's not even like, it's not even necessarily a problem. It's just like areas where the movie is not firing on all cylinders. Hey, there you go, joke.
Wow.
Those areas just stick out because they're so few and far between. Because so much of just all of the rest of the movie is operating at 100%.
Yeah. I would agree with your assessment of a lot of those things. I think the only, again, it's hard to call it a negative. It's just like, the movie's not perfect. Here's a couple places where it's not perfect. I think the flashback visions that Max has of like a little girl feels like it just feels like a miscalculation that Max is obviously supposed to be a nebulous character with a difficult to decipher backstory. And so I don't see how we gain anything with these visions. I don't see how it adds anything to the plot. It doesn't add anything to my understanding of Max, because there's never enough detail to really glean anything. And I just don't, it doesn't, a lot of the other things, like we've said, builds the world of the movie that is very convincing in terms of building history. These visions or flashbacks do very little for me in terms of drawing me into the world of Max. I think Max works better as a man with no name who has no discernible backstory or real motivation. So that's my only kind of nitpick. It's like maybe 20 seconds of the whole, they're very brief sequences. So it's, yeah, 20 seconds of a 2 hour long movie.
Yeah. I agree mostly, I think. I didn't think that was a, well, I mean, you didn't think it was a huge issue either. I also didn't think it was a huge issue, but I agree that the enigma of Max is what's most appealing about his character, and so glimpses behind the curtain aren't necessarily what I'm after. Yeah. Well, I don't really have anything else to say. I think that we can move on into ratings.
Let's do it.
All right, I'll go first. This movie's awesome. This movie's awesome, man. Great soundtrack, great visuals, great action, great acting, great literally almost everything. Just watch it. I'm going to give it an A.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, you know, we've been very positive on the movie. So, yeah, I'm going to give it a 9.7 out of 10.
Very nice. Well, let's... I feel like this episode is just flying by. Let's talk about other great movies. I'll go first again because Nathan stole my recommendation. Darn you, Nathan.
You could have made me switch.
That's true. But I'm too good of a person for that. My recommendation is going to be John Wick. I chose that because I think that after a bit of searching, I think that John Wick operates on a similar kind of logic to Fury Road, in that it's a very simple story executed to near perfection. Obviously, John Wick is most famous for its gun-fu. It's incredibly stylish, well-choreographed action scenes. It's got the cool factor of John Wick himself, the world that he inhabits. I would say that similar to Mad Max Fury Road, there's a very strong vision behind this movie. And we could talk about the way the franchise moved. But at the beginning, I think that John Wick it's that same, like, high-octane, rapid pace, just cool in every frame that you get in Fury Road.
Yeah, I agree. And my recommendation that I stole from Elliot, so we both were going to recommend this, it's going to be Christopher Nolan's Inception. I think we've said before that if you're talking about movies that are just functionally cool because they are about a cool premise and everything that happens in them is something that's cool, that's Inception. It's a great premise, and it is just an impeccably made movie. If you're talking about movies with a clear, coherent, interesting vision, that's Inception. I wouldn't say it's a very simple movie. In fact, I hold very firm that you need to watch Inception 2 times, because the first time you just might be a little... The movie is intentionally confusing at the beginning and then explains things. And so if you watch it a second time, you reap a huge amount of benefit from that, is my firm opinion, and I don't feel like you need to rewatch a ton of movies. So my recommendation is going to be Inception. If you've never watched it, watch it and then watch it again. If you've only watched it once, go back and watch it again. It is so cool to see all of the little details and little pieces of foreshadowing and just structural tightness that Nolan has put into this movie. Also, Tom Hardy is in it.
It's true. That is true. I always remember the only thing from him in that movie that I can remember is just him saying, "Don't be afraid to dream a little bigger, darling," or something like that. When he has the grenade launcher. Yeah, I wholeheartedly second that nomination. Oscars on the brain. Yeah. I wholeheartedly second that recommendation. I wholeheartedly second the notion that life is hard and full of disappointments.
So true. I did want to throw out here before we get to the end that, just a quick rest in peace to Gene Hackman. Tragically passed away today. One of the greats of acting from the 70s, I believe. We talked about him in our episode on the Royal Tenenbaums. I thought he was one of the best parts of the movie and really carried a fantastic character. So he passed away today. Very unfortunate. So wanted to be sure we had that in here.
I agree. I think Gene Hackman did Friendly Menace better than anyone else in the business.
So true. Yeah. But anyway, what are your thoughts on Mad Max Fury Road? Have you read Blood? Actually, it might be Blood, Sweat, and Chrome. That might be why I'm getting confused about the title. Have you read that? Did you think that Tom Hardy seemed like he was insane in that?
What's the real title?
Yeah, what's the real title? Send us an email if you have a request, if you have thoughts on the Oscars. If you have a question about the Oscars or a movie that we haven't talked about in relation to the Oscars, send us an email. We will respond to it. We'll talk about it live on air. You'll be able to hear your own thoughts said back to you. But anyway, thank you so much for listening. We're going to be back next week with another brand new movie review. So look forward to that.
Oh, shoot. Wait, sorry. I completely forgot. There's a new review up on the blog for a movie called Heart Eyes, which is in theaters right now.
Very neat. Yeah, be sure to check out the blog and be sure to get excited for in 2 weeks. We are going to be continuing our walk down memory lane with the Magellans at the movies, top movies of the 80s. So be very excited for that. Send us an email if there's an 80s movie that you want us to talk about or want to be sure that we've watched, because we're trying to cram and watch as many as possible. So look forward to that, and we hope you have a great week in between.